Hello and welcome back to the Mobile Chicane. It's our Chinese Grand Prix preview. We'll also be talking supercars in Tasmania, IndyCar Long Beach, as well as the latest from Formula E and NASCAR. I'm joined as always by my friend Josh. We're going to be talking over the big issues. We'll start off first with some Formula One news, including a story that somewhat interestingly broke on April Fool's Day on the motorsport.com website, but has seemed pretty authentic from the general reaction we've got from people. So we're going to treat it as a sort of a news story here and also have a talk about the future of Formula One engine units from 2021. So basically, the F1 manufacturers plus representatives from the VW Group got together to discuss what will happen in the future with the power unit, whether they should look at a different power unit. And according to what's on motorsport.com, they say that the committee was in favour of abandoning the current generation 1.6-litre turbo hybrid units, although they're still thinking about keeping some of that technology and possibly going to a cheaper and more powerful and quite possibly noisier engine for 2021. Josh, what's your take on the future of F1 engines? Is this a step backwards or do you think it'll happen at all? What's your thoughts on all of this?
Well, I think through all the decisions that F1 has made, all the way back when Max Mosley was the president of FIA, I think from that point when he was about to leave, make way for Jean Todt, I think F1 have just really put themselves in a very difficult and tight situation right now because all the talk so far is that they're not going to go back to V8s or anything bigger, which means basically it's V6s or even, four cylinders. So, that's one big problem for them to just try and discuss. Also, as well, all the talk so far all the confirmed talk so far is that the MGUH, the energy recovery system, particularly for the turbo to eliminate turbo lag, they're most likely going to get rid of that and put a second turbo on the engine. So it's going to be a twin turbo V6 by the sounds of it, with the return of KERS. That does bring the question, what are they going to do about the potential turbo lag? Because, an F1 car, its driving characteristic is being immediately very, very fast at accelerating out of a corner. And, with the turbo lag, they'll take it away. And that'll be a second big hit to what F1 is known to be synonymous for, because after losing the noise because of the V6 turbo engines and the MGUH, they can't really afford, I believe, to lose out on the fast acceleration as well, because that's something that makes an F1 car unique. Yes, like we do have IndyCars which you can say are faster, in a straight line because it doesn't have as much, downforce and as much of an influence on the front and rear wings. However, the fast acceleration is just always something that, grabs the immediate attention of anyone that drives and anyone that's really close to an F1 car when it, goes through past the apex and onto the exit of a corner. So it'll be a massive shame to see the rapid acceleration of F1 car go because of these new regulations that'll be proposed for 2021. However, I can already see that these new engines will be slower, as I don't think by the time we reach the 2020 F1 season, particularly the 2020 Monaco Grand Prix, I don't think many people will be happy about how fast the cars are going, and there'll be a lot of safety concerns I'm already seeing right now, coming up to the 2020 Monaco Grand Prix. So I think these new engines definitely will be slower, And yeah, I'm just not really sure that this is the right move. Like, yes, it's the right move in terms of cost and market relevance, which is a very delicate balance that F1 have tried and failed to get right over the years. And yeah, just it's a very tricky scenario. Like, as I said, F1 have put themselves into a very difficult position, and it's going to be even more difficult to get out of, as it could be even more likely that they'll dig themselves into a bigger hole. And the kicker here is the big elephant in the room is that there was manufacturer talk from the likes of Volkswagen Group, which is sort of maybe possibly interested in getting an Audi F1 team up and running, which is a really big call considering that Dieselgate effectively ended their World Endurance Championship and World Rally Championship operations, only 6 months ago. So this would be a very big and, almost unorthodox move on Audi's part to move in. And also there are some other unnamed manufacturers, voicing the same concerns that that basically it's too expensive and you just need to be with the times. And that's what I was going to say. They were sort of wanting F1 to adopt ele fully electric engines and merge with Formula E by 2025. So yeah, F1 is in a very difficult position right now.
It's interesting. There's a couple of interesting things about it. First off, you're going to lose power, and that's something I'm very disappointed that we're sort of losing the current engines because I think they're fantastic as engines themselves. I mean, yeah, they're not cost efficient, and they've had a pretty spotty relationship with the fans, but they're arguably the greatest engines in Formula One history in terms of technical achievement and just pure power and speed. So yeah, it's disappointing that it looks like they're not going to survive. However, my personal theory is that maybe the FIA is starting to have a look because let's face it, when these regulations came in around 2011, when they were first introduced, originally as I think as a turbo V4 hybrids, which was even more controversial at the time, we didn't have a Formula E, and the World Endurance Championship was, well, there wasn't really a sort of.
It was still in the stages of actually being made, being born in its current form, because I think the first proper World Endurance Championship of this year, I think it was about 2012,
Yeah,
2013.
it was 2012 when they first got the championship together, including pretty much everything from Le Mans prototypes all the way down to GTs. So since then, we've now got effectively two new championships, which are very much focused on road relevance and reliability and efficiency and the like. So my thinking is that maybe the FIA is thinking, right, we've got a good thing going with Formula E, which they do. I mean, everybody wants to join Formula E. I think every Formula One manufacturer currently at the moment, except for maybe Honda, is interested in joining and setting up a team or something like that because they all see that it's a great way to at least get the electrical side of the car going. WEC is a little rocky at the moment in terms of the LMP1 category. We've only got two big manufacturers in Toyota and Porsche in there at the moment. Nissan tried and failed, and similarly, Audi. Has been taken out by the Dieselgate scandal. They've got Ginetta as well coming in. Maybe, I think, possibly what the FIA wants is possibly to very clearly segment out which areas of engine innovation each championship will focus on. For example, the WEC will focus almost entirely on, in the LMP1 echelons, on a hybrid system, and maybe that will filter down slowly towards GT Pro and the like, whereas Formula E is electrical and Formula One is turbo technology. That could be what they are thinking and sort of simplifying it at the moment, because effectively you've got a nice deep bed in WEC, which sort of needs a bit more manufacturers, whilst people will still want to come into Formula One no matter what. The WEC is a little shaky at the moment. So that's my personal theory as to what might be happening in terms of the FIA and trying to simplify their three major series into the focuses they want for manufacturers and make it sort of easier. So that way, there's a bit less of a umming and ahhing about whether to go into F1 or WEC. If you're going to WEC, you're going in for the hybrid technology. And if you're coming into F1, you're coming in for the turbo. But that could possibly backfire depending on what manufacturers want. But yeah, it's all very interesting, isn't it, Josh? Sort of considering what the FIA sort of wants to do with those three series, because yeah, we've heard the rumors about Formula E merging with Formula One, but could it possibly run as a very successful secondary series just with a different technological aim, pretty much?
Yeah, well, like, I mean, it's still very, very early days in terms of the new engines for 2021. And, like, I mean, you know, hopefully they just pick up speed and, you know, confirm bit after bit after bit of the 2021 engine, because, you know, it's only four years away, so they need to really pick up the pace. And yeah, like, I mean, whether or not F1 and Formula E would be, you know, good for some sort of marriage or merge or support category of some sort, you know, it's still, you know, 2025 is still quite a long way away. So yeah, it's a bit too early to tell on that front. However, it still is a possibility, as yeah, just I think it's almost inevitable that F1 will go into the electrical engine category at some point in the future. However, I want them to go into it when the actual electrical engine concept is actually, you know, is actually very viable, and you know, and the current downsize that has now with its limited range and you know, just all the problems that Formula E does face with the batteries and the weights. You know, once all those major issues are resolved and it's more, you know, commercially available and, you know, and just logistically and in every way, you know, very, very, you know, just appealing, then, you know, I want them to move in. But, you know, making a set date right now is just, yeah, I don't agree that, you know, having a set date, you know, going, right, we are going to have fully electric engines in F1 in 2025. I don't want them to do that right now. I want them to just sit back, wait and see what the development of the electrical engines are worldwide, and, you know, just see, you know, until it reaches a certain point where it'll be, you know, all the issues that Formula E does have right now with their electrical engines and car swaps and all that. You know, once that gets to a certain point, then you investigate, you know, when is that a good time to introduce that into the new, as the new engine regulations. As I think it's far too early in the electrical engine's life cycle, to say, right, we're going to go racing electrically at this certain date. I think it's way too early for that.
Just sort of talking as a pure fan point on the future F1 engines, what I would like to see, just purely from fan wishment and fulfillment, would be something like a twin turbo V6 or maybe even a V8, something very champ car, because at least even if it's not high revving, you'll still get a fantastic sound that you used to get from those old champ cars and those Indy cars, Josh. So I think that might be a decent stopgap in terms of hitting the sweet spot between efficiency and reliability, as well as in general spectacle, which is something that's been brought up probably a little too much for my liking, but they may try to make moves to readdress it. I mean, the cars are now faster, whether it's necessarily more enjoyable to watch, we'll have to wait and see. And of course, one part of that will always be the sound, and this might be a good compromise between the two sides of the argument, the efficiency side and the spectacle and excess side of those pretty much wanting the V10s.
Absolutely. And, like, I mean, I still, you know, fondly remember basically almost 10 years ago now, going down to the Gold Coast with my dad and just going to see, you know, the champ cars and the final race of the Indy cars in 2008. And, you know, I still remember very fondly to this day the noise they made and the echo of those engine noises in the concrete canyon that is Surfers Paradise. And yeah, like, I mean, they were fantastic sounding noises, and, you know, and thankfully, because those engines aren't around anymore in the American open wheel racing scene, it doesn't put F1's engines to shame as much. Like, I mean, the current IndyCar engines do put them to shame a little bit, but, you know, they receive an absolute walloping week in, week out if Champ Car and IndyCar decide to just keep those twin turbo V6. I think they were Cosworth engines back
yeah,
in
in the
day.
Final years, they were Cosworth engines.
Yeah, so, like, I mean, you know, and that's another thing. Cosworth were originally an F1 engine supplier, and unfortunately it got too expensive for them, so they sort of more focused, so they sort of adjusted their focus on the IndyCar, and unfortunately they were shut out of that. And, like, I mean, let's be honest, everyone loves a Cosworth name in motorsport. It just sounds right to have a Cosworth name somewhere in the world of motorsport, and unfortunately, you know, they've been completely shut out by basically every single category, unfortunately. So, yeah, like, hopefully they get these new engines, perfectly right. I really hope they do, because if they do, the sound will return, you know, fans will rejoice, and, you know, many fans, especially in America, would, have very fond, nostalgic trips about the old Champ Car sounds, which certainly would, you know, boost F1's popularity in the US, which certainly would make Liberty Media very happy. So, yeah, there is certainly a potential for a Champ Car engine revival in Formula 1.
It seems like the Champ Cars are slowly making their way back. I mean, the current Indy Cars look a bit like the old Champ Cars, and you never know what could happen with the Formula 1 engine. Speaking about Formula 1 engines, let's talk about Sauber, the team who's often played musical chairs with their drivers and their sponsors. They're now having a look around for some different engines. They haven't gone as far as signing four at once, but they apparently are looking at replacing Honda, replacing their longtime partner Ferrari with either Mercedes or Honda. Now, this is interesting because much has been made about Honda's future, and with McLaren and in Formula One, could potentially a plan B possibly be just milling away at the back with Sauber. Certainly not the glamorous return they would be hoping for, but at least it gives them the opportunity to invest in that team. And as well, you have to consider that when Sauber was bought by BMW, they actually made a pretty good thing out of it.
Yeah, for sure. And like, realistically, from Sauber's point of view, they've got nothing to lose. Like, I mean, with the quickly becoming a dusty and, you know, just lifeless and, you know, very quiet and very barren lineup to enter F1 with basically no new manufacturers, possibly until 2021 with the new engines. You know, they've got nothing to lose. They've got guaranteed prize money no matter how badly they do. So, you know, it makes sense for them right now to, with the demise, after the demise of Manor, to start looking at Honda and saying, you know, is there something that we can gain from them? Because if, because current deal right now that with what Honda have with McLaren is free engines plus money on top. And that'll be very, very beneficial for a team like Sauber, who could really use some extra money just to make their cars more competitive, basically. As, you know, the Ferrari partnership right now, it's just not working. You know, they're just not being treated like the way they want to be treated. And, yeah, they're just not getting anywhere with Ferrari engines. And, obviously, on the other side of the coin, the Sauber Mercedes deal certainly, you know, looks very, very promising. Considering how well Manor benefited from having Mercedes engines in the back, you know, famously last year at the long straight at Baku, and with their points finish at Austria, which nearly caused a huge headache for Sauber. So, yeah, like, they've got nothing to lose, and yeah, like, I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing Honda seeking a chance of redemption at Sauber, as, you know, it could be something that both parties really need, you know, as they're both in a, you know, in a very compromised position, and both, you know, really want to get back to what they originally were. So, yeah, Sauber Honda, you know, it sounds pretty out there at the moment, but, you know, it could potentially become a reality pretty soon, and could potentially be a really good deal for both of them.
And, of course, which team did Mercedes enter Formula One with? Well, they had their big success with McLaren, but they entered with Sauber. So you never know. Maybe it's what Honda should have done in the first place and sort of started out low, then reached out to a higher team and just made sure they got the basics right before jumping in and putting their foot through it. Speaking of Sauber, that brings us to our next story, which is about this weekend's Chinese Grand Prix and the news that Pascal Wehrlein will yet again not take part. He was, of course, meant to drive the Australian Grand Prix, but after his incident in the tricycle at the Race of Champions, which sounds more serious than I made it to sound then, he's had to miss out on yet another race. He still has some issues with his back, I think, because he's not been physically ready. He did two practice sessions at the Australian Grand Prix, but dropped out. And in place of him, they dropped in Antonio Giovinazzi, who did really well. I mean, we've talked so much about how well he did at that weekend. Now he's got another chance to prove himself, a bit like what happened with Stoffel Vandoorne last year, pretty much. He came close, but didn't get into Q2 last weekend. He ran the car pretty well, made Marcus Ericsson look like a complete pay driver. And now he's got another chance at a Chinese Grand Prix, which will be a different track, very much a more traditional Hermann Tilke track as opposed to the very unconventional Albert Park circuit, where Antonio Giovinazzi can really apply his trade and sort of make the others in the paddock, particularly Ferrari and some of the other Ferrari-powered teams, have a look at this young kid and wonder, could he possibly be for us?
Yeah, for sure. And let's get this track straight out there. I'm like 95% sure that Giovinazzi has never raced at the Shanghai International Circuit. I could potentially be wrong, but even if he has raced here before, like he's only technically most likely raced there only once. So yeah, it's another new track that Giovinazzi has to learn, and this is a track where the Sauber could potentially struggle a little bit. Just because of all the engine development that's been going on and the improved reliability, which will allow other teams to ride in higher mixtures for more of the race. So it'll be more of a struggle for Giovinazzi to repeat his Albert Park performance. We just don't know at the moment. And Wehrlein right now, I'm just not sure about how bad his injury is. Like, I mean, we're just hearing brief statements about it and basically nothing else. So, yeah, I just don't know, how bad it is at the moment. Like, obviously, it's good enough that he can drive the car for what was basically 30 to 40 laps, which was half a Grand Prix, basically in one day. So, he's fit enough to drive it, but over a whole weekend, I don't know if he's there yet. And, the Bahrain Grand Prix is like 7 days straight after China, so it's gonna be a real push. It's gonna be a real 50-50 about whether or not Wehrlein will race in Bahrain in a week and a bit's time. However, I do certainly expect him to be fully fit and ready for the race in Sochi in Russia. So. I just don't know right now with Wehrlein. I can sort of see him, skipping out in the Chinese Grand Prix as well and being 100% fit for the Russian Grand Prix. But yeah, just, we just haven't been told enough to really make a fair judgment call. Like, I mean, there have been a lot of theories thrown around, in terms of this basically being a knock-on effect about, Bottas's, Bottas being signed into Mercedes instead of Wehrlein. So, but at the moment, we just don't know. We just haven't really been told anything about Wehrlein's injury.
Yeah, this is a weird one. I mean, it's interesting. The last few years, we've sort of struggled. We've had a couple of injuries at the beginning of the season. I think 2015, of course, we had Fernando Alonso's bizarre crash in testing, which took him out for two races. But Kevin Magnussen didn't really get much in the way of seat time in that McLaren. We also had Valtteri Bottas missing the first race of the year because he had some issues with his back, but they ended up being all sorted. Then, of course, last year, Fernando Alonso cracked one of his ribs in that big crash in Australia, and we saw Stoffel Vandoorne come in. So, yeah, it's an interesting little trend. I guess something that's interesting as well is, of course, how taxing the cars are meant to be nowadays, whether the loads and stuff, and what seems to be the issue is fitness, and I guess when you're injured, working that yourself back up to the level of fitness that you need is incredibly difficult, and even more so now that has been raised up a couple of bars from last year. So
that could be, I think, the real question for me is just how much fitness and training is he be able to gain with this injury? And if it's not going to settle down soon, it could really put a big dent in his season so far. I mean, it's not going to take him out for all of it, but you could possibly see something where if he's not able to get up to the level where he's able to stay in the car for 40 laps, in terms of just sheer just being able to drive and having the muscle strength and everything ready, that you might not even see him until Spain, which of course would be the worst case scenario. But yeah, no, this is definitely not the start of the year that Wehrlein wanted. Pretty much, I think they've really gone away the last 4 or 5 months in terms of everything like that. I mean, to come from being the youngest DTM winner to be stuck at the back of the field probably isn't the greatest way to get your start in Formula One, but I guess he's still got plenty of time and he's just, I guess, still plying his trade and just working his way back up to the top.
Yeah, for sure. And let's not forget, you know, he was the second and only driver to get points for Manor, the other being Jules Bianchi at Monaco, about 2013. So yeah, like, I mean, he's certainly got the talent for sure, but yeah, just we as I said earlier, we just don't know what position he's in at the moment. As yeah, it's just a sit and wait game right now, and you know, it'll take time, but you know, he'll definitely as Naveen said, it'll, you know, it's a 99% chance for him to be back in the car by Barcelona. I personally think he'll be back in the car by Russia, but you know, as I said, we just haven't been told anything about Wehrlein's injury right now.
Yeah, it's certainly a difficult one to judge. So this weekend, Formula One goes to China a little bit earlier in the season than we usually expect. It's been bumped up to the second race of the year, rotating with Bahrain. Pretty much the stereotypical Herman Tilt circuit. I always think of this one as sort of like Malaysia on steroids, in terms of it's got similar characteristics in terms of the twisty turn one and the long back straights right before the final corner and all that sort of stuff like that. So yeah, it's an interesting one. However, even though it's not necessarily an inspiring layout and it's set in the swamp and out of Shanghai, it does at least produce some decent racing. I mean, it's probably one of the more underrated circuits on the calendar. The race last year was exceptional in terms of all the action we saw. I mean, 2015 was also fairly highly ranked amongst the fans. It's always produced something different, like Red Bull's first win, or the time Lewis Hamilton beached it in the pit lane when the rain came down in 2007. So, yeah, I think we probably will be in for a better show, certainly better than Australia. And it could really surprise us, and we could see some interesting stuff happening in terms of where teams are placed, because we still don't have a proper grip on where everybody is. And I think this will be the first track where we really see the difference between Mercedes and Ferrari, Josh.
Yeah, but then again, on the other hand, it could be potentially even worse than Australia, because something that China has that Albert Park doesn't really is high-speed corners, and that's where most of the downforce is generated, and that's when the dirty air is at its worst. So it could potentially be worse, it could potentially be better, we just don't know. However, what is for certain is the turn one action right now, the turn one action at China this weekend is going to be insane about, you know, just how fast those cars are going to go through there. It's going to be an absolute spectacle. So if you're in China or you're going to the Chinese Grand Prix, get yourself to the turn one grandstand, even though it is pretty far away from the circuit because of the massive sand trap. Get yourself to turn one. That's where all the action's going to be, with the insane speed that those cars will take in. It's going to be an absolute, it's going to be mind-blowing how fast those cars are going to go through turn one this weekend. In terms of the race itself, me and Naveen have basically sort of agreed throughout the weekend post Australia that it is going to be a two-stop. Pirelli themselves that have said that they are expecting soft and super soft to be used only, and the medium tyre just basically to be only used throughout Friday. So it's going to be interesting to see how the tyres hold, as you know, this will basically be the biggest test for the new tyres this year. Just coping with the stresses of Shanghai. So we could potentially be in for a good weekend, or we could potentially be in for a procession. But one thing that will be very interesting to see is, just like as Naveen said, what the pecking order exactly is, as this will be the first real showing that we'll have about where all the cars are. And, if Vettel can win this weekend at China and back up his Australian Grand Prix victory, then you can't, discount that Ferrari are definitely championship contenders this year. So that's another thing to watch. Also, on the other side of the garage, you've got Kimi Raikkonen. If he doesn't perform this weekend, and once again blames the tires, then I think we could potentially see the final few races of Kimi Raikkonen's career in F1 this year. So yeah, the pressure's on Raikkonen right now just to match Vettel. As he's got the ability to do it, but if he just doesn't gel with the tires again this weekend, his days are numbered. And once again, Bottas just basically being a rear gunner for Hamilton this weekend, I can already see. So yeah, like even if the racing is pretty mediocre and basically a one what however many lap a 56 lap parade, then even then, it still will be pretty interesting to see what the final result is.
The other thing that could be interesting is the fact that there is rain, which is projected or sort of forecast to come up during the weekend. At the moment, they're thinking it'll come Sunday morning and also throughout Friday. It won't be there for the race, which of course takes place in the afternoon, but it could possibly result in a wet start. And I'd like to see how these new Pirelli tires go in the wet, because that was a real area of concern, particularly with the full wets last year. I don't think we'll see them this weekend, but yeah, another hopefully exciting Grand Prix and one in a decent time zone as well. With that, it all kicks off, I think, around 4 o'clock on Sunday. Also, plenty of action around in the Australian time zone, particularly in Australia, with the Supercar Series returning to Simmons Plains. Before then, though, we'll have a look at some of the news headlines that have been breaking throughout the week, most of which isn't really news that's really new, to be honest. I mean, yet again, another article from the Daily Telegraph and News Corporation saying that we're having a Mustang, which was pretty quickly jostled by the by Pro Drive, who said, no, we haven't decided yet. Negotiations are still up in the air. So that was just really another dead-end story in that part. I mean, we can only really talk about the story so many times, Josh. I mean, we'd love to see it happen, but it's still, you have to remember, it's still all up in the air, and it really depends, I guess, on the way the captain, Roger Penske's negotiations go in Detroit.
I mean, just the situation with the Mustang right now is it's unlikely, but not impossible. So I don't think we'll see it in 2018, but we could potentially see it in 2019 or into Gen 3. But it really depends. And I personally think that we're going to see the Ford Mondeo replace the Falcon, as I think Ford will learn from Holden that Australian fans don't like basically nameplates that they just don't know. Like, even though it says Commodore, it is basically an Opel insignia, and that's just something that Australian people just don't know, and then they'll just don't like it because it replaces an iconic brand. So, a Mondeo, it's well known around Australia, and it's a fantastic looking car, and it will also align with Ford's Global Motorsport program, with the Mustang being a GT4 racer only, the Mondeo being used in supercars and NASCAR, and the Ford GT being used in GT slash prototype slash Le Mans slash IMSA. So it would align very well with their NASCAR program, and basically showcasing their premier four-door sedan to the two big audiences in America and Australia. So it would make quite a bit of sense actually for them to use the Mondeo, as it's a fantastic looking car, and also as well for Penske and for ProDrive, it would be an easier transition, as they'd be able to transfer some of the knowledge of the FGX over to the Ford Mondeo, as it's got a similar front end and a similar rear end. It's a similar top car. However, there are some differences with any car change, and it would be a good fit as well on the current roll cage and chassis. So I personally think we're going to see a Mondeo be the FDX replacement. When that is, we just don't know yet. So it's either 2018, or 2019 that we see full Mondeo come into the sport. And the possibility of Mustang, I think that might just have to wait until GT3, but it would certainly be, obviously the Mustang is selling pretty well right now in Australia, even without Supercar's involvement. However, it would cement itself and basically stamp out any chance of competition from the Camaro coming, FGM eventually do decide to bring the Camaro to Australia. It would make Australia, it would confirm Australia as a Mustang only country for the next, say 20 years. So it would certainly, boost sales and basically, almost confirm the replacement of the HSVs and the FPVs, for current Supercars fans, there will be people, going out, basically, looking at, what they can replace their Commodores, their HSVs, their Falcons, their FPVs, their Utes next year with, production, with Australian manufacturing production completely stopped, by October this year. So there's good cases for, the Mondeo and the Mustang, and then, obviously, you've got your outside contenders. There was the rumors of a Ford Taurus, which is basically a bigger version of the Mondeo that sold in America only. There were big rumors going around that there was one that landed or was shipped secretly to Australia about 2-3 years ago. But nothing came of that, and. There are just a few outside contenders on Ford's part, but it's certainly interesting to see. And I think one thing is for certain, Supercars will look very, very different in 5 years' time.
Yeah, it's going to be a completely different ball game, to be honest. So we move on to Tasmania, the Simmons Plains Raceway in Launceston, an interesting track, very much a bull ring, 2.4 kilometres anti-clockwise. Not necessarily the most inspiring track layout, but still very memorable, and you get some fantastic action. Mainly, of course, turn four, which is a great corner where you get so much passing and so much opportunities to do some decent racing, particularly down the back straight through turn five. You see some great side-by-side action. So it's really sort of one of those other underrated Australian tracks, which really helps produce some great racing, in general, it's a very good racetrack to watch and a very good race to watch indeed. It's interesting though, the form. Last year, Mark Winterbottom dominated the qualifying, but it was Holden drivers, Shane McGisbergen and Will Davison, who took the wins in the race. And over the last 12 races, we've seen Holden dominations. But the one team that could change that is DJR Team Penske, who looked very good, who were dominant at the Australian Grand Prix, looked fairly good. Over one lap at Clipsil, and probably could have gone on to take both races had things played out a little differently. So yeah, another great round to see where these teams end up, because we still don't know after two rounds. And let's face it, this championship will be won and lost on the sprint rounds.
Yeah, for sure. And this is the weekend where we really see where TJR Team Penske stack up against Triple Eight. Obviously, we do expect Triple Eight to have a fantastic setup when they roll their cars out for Friday practice. And it's been said many times that the FGX just loves the softer compound of rubber. So compared to the VF Commodore, so it's going to be really interesting to watch to see how the new super soft tires perform at Tasmania, and that opens the strategy door even further open. So we could see some pretty radical strategies throughout the Saturday and Sunday races. So, yeah, I'm very interested to see, you know, how it plays out, and also as well, just in general, you know, the Superstoff tyres with the rubber being put down for the Sunday race, it's going to make Turn 4 even more grippy, and you know that will provide even more clever chances for overtakes into Turn 6. So it's going to be a fantastic weekend, and definitely it will be the start of what is set to be a Triple Eight v DJR Team Penske grudge match that should go all the way to Newcastle. So yeah, this could, you know, really set the tone for the whole championship as there's some very important races coming up. Obviously there's the two 250k races at Phillip Island, which I think's the event after this, and then Barbagallo as well, which is very high on tyre degradation. So yeah, you know, Simmons Plains could very well be calm before the storm, which is very funny, which is pretty ironic considering that, you know, that Tasmania does produce its drama, but with the very high tyre degradation circuits and the of Phillip Island and Barbagallo coming up, and the complete wild card that is the two 250k races at Phillip Island, you know, it's going to be it's going to be very important for teams to adapt, especially Triple Eight and DJR Team Penske, to their new surroundings, as you know, these new formats, they are going to be the norm. So yeah, it's going to be a very unpredictable month ahead in terms of supercars, and yeah, it all kicks off this weekend in Tasmania, and yeah, it should be a fantastic weekend. I can't see, you know, anything that could possibly go wrong for supercars this weekend.
Exactly. Yes, it's set to be another great weekend over this Saturday and Sunday. So moving on to what happened last weekend, a very, very chaotic race in the Formula E series in Mexico. An absolute stunner. We saw Lucas Degrassi take his first win of the year and pretty much take his first win in Mexico. He won the race last year but lost it due to a disqualification. He was last after having to pit to fix a broken rear wing that he picked up in the first lap, yet managed to get it timed just right during a safety car before a halfway mark, where he was able to pit and change his car and somehow managed to conserve the energy and hold off John Erik Verne in the final few laps. It was an unbelievable race. We saw the pole sitter. We saw a completely different starting order because of how dirty the track was. We saw Oliver Turvey on pole before he broke down. Jose Maria Lopez was running up there, which would have pleased the South American fans. Then, of course, Degrassi made his move. We saw John Erik Verne get stuck behind the car of Jerome D'Ambrosio, the Farag Dragon car, which is running at the back, but jumped to the front and was really holding off Verne during the final few laps. It was all incredibly exciting. And then last lap, chaos in the stadium section, with Felix Rosenquist hitting getting involved with a collision with Nico Prost and Nick Heidfeld again, taking them out in the stadium section. It was all happening. I mean, Formula E as a series, it just goes from strength to strength. It's probably one of the best series that nobody's watching, Josh.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, congratulations if you kept up with every single moment of that race, as, you know, and also as well, it sets up what's set to be another head-to-head showdown between Lucas Degrassi and Sebastian Buemi, with Buemi finishing all the way down in 14th. So that's going to put a real, you know, that could really slam the brakes on his championship campaign. So yeah, you know, an insane race. Like Mitch Evans, you know, he was nowhere for most of this season, and he got fourth throughout all the chaos. So it just shows what a crazy race it was. So yeah, like, what can you say? Like, I mean, Formula E is going from strength to strength. Yes, there was chaos, but you know, you can tell, you know, how good Formula E is going at the moment. You know, in that chaos, there was no controversy, on Formula E's part. Like, there was controversy between drivers, But, you know, as a category, there was no controversy from Formula E itself. So a fantastic weekend. Like, I mean, many people had doubts about the Mexico E-Prix, you know, the track layout when it first came out. And, yeah, it's came out and, you know, just silenced all its critics. Like, it put on a great show. And, well, yeah, just I'd have to say that is the best race that has ever happened at Mexico City since it got its complete revamp and was completely redone with all the new facilities back in 2015.
Yeah, it was another stunner, and I think particularly the changes to Turn 1 getting rid of that chicane just made such a difference. You saw these great runs coming in round the side of the circuit, right up into the back, that back chicane, which really was where we saw John Eric Byrne desperately diving to get past Jerome D'Ambrosio, but yet just couldn't do it. Another spectacular race, and decent time zone for Australians as well. I mean, very pleasant to have a race at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. But more of that, please, certainly. But yeah, a series that just goes from strength to strength in terms of the manufacturer to just the racing. I mean, you see that, you sort of wonder, why don't more people watch it? I mean, I love it to have a free-to-air GP in Australia sometime in the future. I think it would only go from strength to strength then. And if they actually get a race here, well, it would only go, it would be bigger and better. I mean, I could see, that really taking off should be quite exciting. Speaking of open wheel racing, let's move on to the Verizon IndyCar Series, which heads to one of the marquee circuits of the year at Long Beach. It is truly one of the classic, circuits on the IndyCar calendar, of course, the next Formula One circuit, but really made its name with the IndyCar series, and it's back in its good old second position on the calendar. Should be yet another spectacular weekend for a series that had a great race last time out, of course, in St. Petersburg, and can only get better from there.
Yeah, for sure, and I think many people will be looking to Long Beach as, you know, just as a bit of a form guide. In terms of, you know, whether or not, you know, there are any, you know, just who the championship contenders are, because, St. Petersburg was just such a, you know, great race. You know, it put up, you know, a lot of, you know, interesting results. And, yeah, this championship could really, be wide open to, you know, Chevrolet and Honda teams. So, yeah, I'm just, you know, really looking forward to Long Beach. Like, I mean, it's one of the legendary weekends in motorsport. You know, just many people, you know, like, I mean, you know, it's just such a big race. You know, it basically, you know, gave birth. You know, it was, you know, alongside Monaco, it was, you know, one of the circuits that really gave birth to the era of street circuit racing and, you know, just racing by the beach, which thankfully gave a surface paradise. So, yeah, fantastic weekend ahead for IndyCar. And, this weekend, I think we can certainly see, expect to see, you know, who's got the good car pace and who's championship and who's definitely in the hunt for a championship. And if Bourdais comes out with the win this weekend, then we very well could be seeing another extremely dominant performance from him, just like back in the Champ Car days, where he absolutely, you know, made a clean sweep of it, and you know, it was a complete shellacking. So, yeah, there are a lot of questions for IndyCar this weekend, and I've got the feeling that some of them will be answered, but some will have to wait until the next race, which I think is at Phoenix, the one after this.
I think they might go to Alabama first and then Phoenix, which, yeah, of course, is the first oval of the year.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, we will know the form guide for IndyCar over the next few weeks. But, yeah, I think, you know, the real race to the championship starts this weekend at Long Beach. As you know, it's always a fantastic spectacle for IndyCar. You know, a moment outside the Indy 500 where IndyCar really shines in the American motorsport scene. And, yeah, just can't wait for the weekend.
Yeah, and yet again, it's another opportunity for us to see exactly where Honda and Chevrolet are, because we don't know yet. It's still
very much up in the air after last weekend. We saw Honda look very, very strong indeed. We're going to see them on another street circuit, although I think the real testing point is when we go to visit the ovals. Phoenix and, of course, the first road course of the year at Alabama, which, of course, was a pretty strong circuit for Honda last time. So a great battle between Simon Pagenaud and Graham Rahal. Hopefully, he gets all the attention it deserves, because I think we talked last year about how the race was outrated on television in the United States by an English Premier League match, which certainly wasn't where the series needed to be. But no, it's just hopefully keep the good news coming, because IndyCar needs as much of it as it can, and it's getting plenty of it recently. There's, of course, been, everybody loves the new look 2018 cars, which you got a better look of this week, and Long Beach, yet another fantastic race. And hopefully we do see some good racing. Speaking of good racing, we'll move on to NASCAR, which always throws up something interesting, particularly at Martinsville, one of the big insane circuits on the calendar, one of the shortest ones, a real bullring. And for the first time since 2002, they had a Ford in victory lane. Brad Keselowski taking his first win at the half mile, the second in 2017. Just beating out, guess again, Kyle Busch, who's really been pushing hard against these Penske drivers. I mean, he had a little feud with Joey Logano, and he led the most race laps at Martinsville, but it was a Ford yet again, came out on top. Yep. Another a great race. Chase Elliott was up again as well. He took a stage win, as well as Joey Logano and Austin Dillon. Just NASCAR, in spite of whatever they've been trying to do to try and make things apparently even more exciting, and which arguably is somewhat impacted the racing, they're still having some decent races.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it's been another weekend where Kyle Busch has come so close yet so far from a race win. You can clearly see he's frustrated, and also as well, the big one happened at Martinsville, which unfortunately did take a few cars out of the race because of the new damage rule on pit road. So another real, you know, grudge mat, another real door-to-door bullring race at Martinsville, which is what you expect. And, it just keeps the ball rolling. This weekend, NASCAR heads to Texas, which certainly can provide good racing, and, certainly does, like its fair share of side by side to three wide racing. And, just the circuit itself, is, pretty light, very well liked, among drivers and fans, alike. So, yeah, just, Texas will be another good race this weekend, and NASCAR right now, like with the stage system and the way the chase will be later in the year, you know, there's just no form guide right now. Like, it's, you know, you basically have to forget everything you know about, you know, trying to pick a winner early in the season, as you know, it's such a long way to get to even the chase, and there's so many ways that you can get points and, you know, have a complete terrible weekend that it's just so hard just to really keep track of where everyone's going. So, yeah, Kyle Larson, you know, once again, you know, takes the championship lead into the next race. Chase Elliott, you know, right behind him, 4 points. And then there's a bit of a gap to Martin Truex Jr. in third place. So, yeah, another great weekend for NASCAR, and, it moves on to Texas. I think they've repaved it, or they might be having discussions. There's a lot of discussions about, you know, quite a few tracks, you know, repaving or not. But, you know, another great weekend is being set up right now at Texas, and, just the NASCAR show. It never sleeps, it never stops, and, it's just the momentum for the season is building, for sure.
Yeah, should be another exciting weekend. Also in action, MotoGP returns to Argentina. I mean, this is a series which, of course, it can't put a foot wrong, pretty much. I mean, we saw another stunning race. We've talked about how close the series looks to be in terms of particularly the battle between Yamaha, Ducati, and Honda. And, of course, their lead drivers, Valentino Rossi, Jorge Lorenzo, and Marc Marquez. So we now go to Argentina, which should be another exciting weekend, another good weekend sort of Jack Miller to sort of set himself up and put his best foot forward as a possible future Honda Works driver.
Yeah, for sure. And like he did everything right. And Qatar, really outperformed his teammate, and also Cale Crutchlow, which is the other Honda driver, rider, I should say. So yeah, moves on to Argentina, and it's thrown some okay races in the past, like none electrical, but it's had some decent races, and once again, like MotoGP, like even though it's in fantastic form at the moment and should be another great weekend ahead, MotoGP doesn't really hit its doesn't really hit its strides until it gets back to Europe at the Circuit de Jerez. MotoGP, it's only gonna get better. Argentina, it's as I've said, it's an okay race, but I think we'll get a better once again, like with many other categories this weekend, we'll get a better looking to see who is a championship contender. And if Maverick Vinales, steps on the podium once again this weekend, then you have to factor in that he could very well be a MotoGP series winner by the end of this year.
Yeah, should certainly be plenty of very exciting and another good race to watch. So, plenty of action over the race weekend. We, of course, have Formula One in action, IndyCar as well, which will finish off on Monday morning, MotoGP a bit earlier in the day, and Supercars as well. Should be a very exciting weekend indeed. Next weekend, we will be talking everything that happened over the Chinese Grand Prix and heading straight to Bahrain. Another interesting home and talk track, another one which has produced great racing in the past. What will it produce again? We'll have to wait and see. Also, with that, we have the return of the World Endurance Championship. It's a new season for the Premier Endurance category. It's been an interesting couple of months, last season for them. How they will go without Audi, what will happen, particularly with the newly reinvigorated Porsche and Toyota lineups, which has really gone after the talent from the Audi lineup. And yeah, it's going to be an exciting year to see what that holds. We'll be bringing you all of that next week. Until then, I've been Naveen Razik.
And I've been Josh Carroll.
And we'll see you next time. Goodbye.